And welcome back to the Friday crossover. As we promised, we're bringing you something completely new, something completely different this time around. We've got Professor Mamaketi Pakeng in the studio, which is our car.
Which is our car!
Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks very much for inviting me.
So tell us, you know, you've started your university tour. You have been out of the university world, you know, practicing as VC for a little bit now. How's your life looking? How's everything going?
I mean, it's great. I'm enjoying this phase of my life, you know. Aww. It's nice to be in this position where I do what I want to do. I don't do what
your
I have to
terms.
Do,
yeah.
You know. Yeah. So, and I've been doing the campus tour. The campus tour is incredibly exciting. I mean, of course, Vets is my home. So I've been there more times than any other place.
Don't say Vets is your home, girl.
I'm a Vetsy. I'm sorry, but I'm a Vetsy.
We'll take it. So please tell us more about your campus tours, Prof. What are you doing? What is the aim? What inspired you to start with that?
You know, I started the campus tour because students have been asking, come to my campus, come to UP, come to UFS, come. You know, and then I thought, you know, I can't just be responding. Let's just do proper campus tour. And the thing is, I don't talk for free. I don't go to people for free, right? I talk for money. But for students, I'm willing to do it for free. So I thought, okay, here's a special deal. I'll do campus tour to all the... So I announced that I'll do campus tour because all the campuses were asking me to go. And the best way to do it, of course, is to get some group of students, whether it's, you know, house committee of a particular race or SRC or whatever, inviting me. So at VEST, there's been different groups. That's why I've been there several times.
Oh, I see.
And then I go and do... You know, whether I speak, you know, obviously I speak, but I'll do other things as well. You know, so it's been exciting. And Rose, I have to say, takes the trophy at this
Does
point.
It? Okay.
Special.
Well, we've seen you up and down. You've been there in the media. You've been doing all your keynote speeches.
Yes.
But something we noticed a couple of weeks ago is you were rubbing shoulders, Prof.
With
some interesting people. Did you
get
$3 billion?
They were rubbing shoulders with Prof.
I don't even know who are these people.
You
who are these lucky people?
Ms. Oprah Winfrey.
Oh!
So Tom and I were like, we have to invite you and put like stuff you in our little student car so we can rub shoulders with you and get a little bit of that. Can you tell us more about that experience?
But this, I thought that's known. That's not new, me, Oprah. Is that new? I mean, for you, is that new? No, I'm just saying. I mean, where have you been?
Where have I been? Oh, my goodness.
But I'm on the board of the Oprah Winfrey Leadership Academy for Girls. And I've been on the board since 2016, 2015. And, and so, you know, she's on the board as well. She's not the chair. The chair is the head of Miss Porter's house.
Okay.
And there's other people as well. So, and I think I've posted, I don't post a lot about her. Because that's not my whole life. That's just
a little bit
of my life. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But when I won the Africa Education Medal last year, she sent a whole video recording congratulating me. And then we put it on social media. No, I can't say that.
Okay.
I work for her.
Okay.
And she's an incredibly nice person, so you know. Yeah. I don't want to give you a sense that we're exchanging WhatsApps, like, you know.
She didn't hand you a $3 billion or a car.
You know,
you
like,
get a car.
No, just now people will be, you know, camping at my gate.
Oh, Prof.
No,
when she gives you a car, then she can get your number.
Then we'll talk.
And besides that, you've been so busy. I mean, for me as well, I always look out for people who are keeping active, who are always, you know, looking after their body as well as their mind. You've been climbing Kilimanjaro. You've also been exploring the wonders of Cape Town.
Yes.
Is that something, I mean, you've always been active, but is that something you've taken a lot more control of now? Is that something you've had a bit more time to enjoy now that you've had a bit more time?
You know, I decided to go to Kilimanjaro at the beginning of the year.
Yes.
And of course, I mean, there's I think what was happening in my professional life at that time at UCT was also an incentive to do that. I thought I should do this, you know. Mm. And of course, I was Temba Letusi Isi from Stellenbosch let me in into this. And I was like, oh yes, I can do that. I'm going to do that, you know. But of course, climbing mountains, hiking has been my thing.
Yeah,
I have gone for a weekend with the UCT climbing club.
Oh, think, that's so special.
I think 2018 or 2019, I went with them. It was a long hike, and we overnighted at UCT. Has got a place somewhere in Ceres in the mountains. We slept over there, and we came back the following day.
Oh, nice.
So it's not a new thing. It's a thing that I do.
Yes,
yeah, it's something that I like doing.
You're listening to the first episode of the UCT Radio Roadshow with Tom and Mta. Now, please note, in the next segment, Prof. Mamaketi Pakeng makes claims against the Ombud, and therefore we'd like to allow the Ombud a right of reply. So, we will reach out to the Ombud regarding the claims that are about to be made by the professor in the next segment, right? So, should we receive a response, we will air it next week Friday at 2 p.m. in our show and a follow-up podcast episode. So please do note that we haven't received a response from the Ombud as of yet, as we have not reached out to them as of yet. We will reach out to them, and should we get a response, we will air this next week Friday at 2 p.m. and with a follow-up podcast episode. Okay, let's get back into the interview. Also, I mean, there's just so many things you're doing, you know, we're just trying to get to all of them. I mean, your book, how is that going? Where are you in that process of writing it?
Yep.
And so forth. And is that something that you started this year or
no,
something that you've been going?
No, you know, I started the book in I started the book in 2020 when a whole drama unfolded in the media that I'm a bully. I bullied 37 people, and you know, there was no evidence, no names. I demanded names. I was told that I can't be given names because it's all confidential.
Huh.
I demanded a right of response. I wasn't given an opportunity, because how do you respond when you don't know who's this?
Yes.
So it was faceless complaints from faceless people, and everybody, I mean the majority of people, not everybody, the majority of people just believed it, especially on campus, you know, senior people, and some people who I reported to believed this, you know, and it was, I was so frustrated because I thought, here am I at one of the top universities on the continent, and they just don't understand the basic administrative justice.
Just the decency.
They say the university prides itself on social justice, but just basic administrative justice. Give me the names, follow proper process, let me respond.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Yeah.
They just said, you are. Why? Because this woman says you are. And I said, this woman actually says I am. And she starts by saying, I started by bullying her.
Yes.
Oh.
Okay. There's an emergency.
This is the drama.
The joy
of radio live on wheels. We are being followed by.
No. This is medical emergency. Yes.
Attention. Sorry.
Got in trouble there.
No. So. And of course, I'm glad that the case that caused the fallout between me and this woman, the Ombud, the former Ombud, is now out in the public, because the student took it to the public protector, and it's been ruled on that the decision that we made was correct. That I was asked, did you tell the Ombud that you don't trust her? Yes, I did. And how on earth do I trust somebody who wants to whisper to me to pass some student?
Yeah, that's
That's dodgy, okay? That's dodgy. Let's forget the fact that it could have been a trap, right? But nobody has got a right to come to me and tell me that the student failed a PhD because of plagiarism, and our policy says if you found of plagiarism, you must fail. But can I make a deal for the student to rewrite and resubmit? I don't do deals for passing. And don't give me any reason. Don't even tell me that the student has been here for 4 years. He comes from a country. He can't just go back without a degree. You know? So this whole thing went into the media that I'm a bully. Without giving details, I bullied the ombud and I bullied 37 other people. No names. And first of all, you can't be a jury and a judge in your own case. Second of all, you must give me administrative justice. So I started writing the book then. And I did that because I thought, sure, I must write. It was sort of therapeutic for me to write.
For you to get your own narrative.
Yes, but I didn't start there. I started at when I was born because I thought, why do these things, why is this happening? And I sort of, that's when I thought, you know, why? I'm doing my best. I found a university in protest, in chaos. I put it together. Anyone with the brain would know that the university wasn't functioning until I became VC. Right now, I thought I'm a disruptive presence, you know. Just being here made people uncomfortable. People were questioning my PhD, even though I got it here in this country. People, you know, I was like, I'm a disruptive presence. Just being present. The criticisms that I was getting were weird. You know, that I had never seen that in my life.
I think, you know, what was probably challenging for a lot of people in an institution as old and predominantly white, well, historically so white, is having you as a VC come in and you had your own rules and your own definition of what it means to be a leader in an institution. Like,
well, this. Maybe not. Maybe I'm just I'm the first VC to come from a working class background.
Well,
yes,
well.
I'm not the first woman, but I'm the first one to come from working class.
Yeah.
I never went to UCT, I never went to Oxford or Cambridge. I'm a vetty and I'm proud, but I've got the damn credentials of any white man who went to Oxford and Cambridge, right? They've got B ratings, I've got a B1 rating, and it's still valid today, right? Now, I understand that, but also for me, I had figured that, I've accepted that who I am matters. Who I am is enough. I don't have to be someone else. As long as I don't break the law, I don't challenge other people's rights and so on. I respect other people's rights. I'm not immoral. You know, I don't drink, I don't smoke. Like I say, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't steal money. What do you want? Right. Now, I felt that the university at that time, I felt that needs who I am, not just what I know. It needs, and doesn't only need what I can do, it needs who I am.
But Prof, you can agree that, you know, coming in as who you are, I mean, besides that you came from the fact of a working class background, the way you took leadership, the way you looked at students and you were completely student orientated, did redefine what leadership
is.
And did redefine what leadership looks like in a university context.
True. And that wasn't my plan. But at that time, students needed attention. And I'm an academic. I didn't ignore academics. Academics are adults. There was a lot of trauma. Students were feeling not part of. And if you don't deal with that, you're continuously going to have contestations and fights and whatever, you know. So I felt that it's important to calm things down. Yeah.
Okay. Prof, what do you have to say to the students like me, for example, who were particularly surprised about your exit from the university this year? And what do you have to say? What is it? Like, what is something that you also have to clarify for your university students as well? Because it was just a very chaotic moment for a lot of people.
Yeah. Just abrupt.
It was abrupt. It was a surprise. And then everything kind of changed a little bit. So what do you have to, and like, we didn't get a direct address from you, Prof.
But they made sure that you don't.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's your opportunity, Prof. What is something you
want to
clarify?
I think, first of all, I have to say to students and everybody out there that, you know, I live with the understanding that everything comes to an end.
Yeah.
Good things come to an end, bad things come to an end. Nothing lasts forever. Was it supposed to end now? at when it ended in the way that it ended, I don't know. Yeah. But it was going to end at some stage. Did I want to end it in the way it did? Did I want it to end the way it did? No. I would have loved to say goodbye properly. But I did say goodbye. I came to the buses. I tried to do it in my own way, and it pissed off a lot of people. But that's their problem. and, of course, I didn't reach all the students. But it ended, right?
Yeah.
And it ended because I would say the powerful minority wanted it to end. And I'm saying the powerful minority because I had had 78% vote at Senate to have a second term. All right? And that vote didn't just come about. It was presented to Senate after consultation with all the constituencies of UCT, the trust in the UK, US, Australia, Canada, and the US. And so, all the people internationally that I've been working with said, perfect. And the people inside said, perfect. Of course, I'm sure there were other people who said no. And then it went to Senate. I got the vote. It went to council. I got a vote. And then I decided to take sabbatical. And the first Senate I was on sabbatical, hell broke loose. Not about me, but about the chair of council. And suddenly, Adrian Basson was writing the narrative before it even happened. I mean, you know.
There again was an opportunity, and exactly where you were discussing that you weren't offered that opportunity to respond to so many things.
Well, the things were in the newspapers that were discussed in council meetings that I wasn't there. I just knew if there's a council meeting that I've excused myself in because I'm conflicted, Adrian Basson will put it out before they even get the minutes, right? But I felt I don't want to respond because I figured what's going on. People on council and in the university hated the fact that things were leaking to the media. But suddenly they were not bothered. Where was he getting all this?
Yeah.
Okay? Suddenly they were not bothered. And I realized what the game was. And I felt, let them have their way. Sometimes it's not a good idea to get into the pit with the pig, because at the end, nobody knows the difference. So I decided to pull back and just wait. And people assume that when you're quiet, it's because you're guilty.
Yeah.
Or because I'm wrong. I mean, even when the bully things came, I didn't talk much. I just kept quiet, you know, because I realized what was going on. First of all, the report was late. Second of all, the report was problematic. Thirdly, the person was going out of the terms of reference. But they were ignoring all of that. And suddenly she's correct, irrespective of the questions that I'm asking, you know. So you see when things... And then, of course, you go to these meetings, you see the people who are pushing this, you know. And some of them are the very people, you'll be shocked. People on council who are trolling.
This is UCT Radio.
The crossover on UCT Radio. Soundtracks your campus life.
Friday crossover with Tom and Nta, and we're doing something really interesting today. We're doing radio live from Wheels. It's quite unconventional.
It is, because I'm sitting in the back here. I'm relaxed. You're driving.
We're driving. You know, we're like driving through the hills of Camps Bay right now. And we're heading over for a smoothie. Our guest today is Mamogeti Pakeng. Say hey, Prof.
Hello.
Where are we going for the smoothie? You're like, this is my favorite place.
Everyone who knows me knows that I promise smoothies and I take them to Nourish.
Love!
All of Nourish know that I'm the number one.
The crossover on UCT Radio.
The soundtrack to your campus life.
All right, so I mean, I didn't want to talk to my mom about my struggles in detail. So she'd read them in the papers and she'd say, come back home. You know, they'll kill you in Cape Town. You must come back home. You're educated, you're experienced, you'll get another job here. And I would say to her, it's fine, I'm okay, don't worry, the newspapers are exaggerating it. Yeah. And you can't burden your mom with these things, you know? Like, my mom is getting old, and so I didn't want her to worry too much about this stuff. So speaking to a psychologist and a psychiatrist was very important in that time, because at least they can keep the things. But also the relationship is different. It's a professional relationship rather than the one that I have with my mom.
And do you still continue with psychology and that type of stuff now? Or is
I
it something
do.
You keep going with?
I'm still doing it because, I mean, 2023 is my year of healing.
Mm.
Yeah, it's my year of healing in so many ways. In December 2022, I went to the hospital for just tests, because my psychiatrist felt, let's do the test and see that everything is okay, because the legs were giving me bigger problems. And they did the heart scan, you know, brain scan and all of that, MRI, CT scan and so on. And they found that I had minor strokes. Right, and my blood pressure. I slept in hospital for the whole weekend, not because I was sick, not because I was stressed, like the newspaper said, but because they were doing the test and they were monitoring me for the whole week. Okay. And my blood pressure was high, and so that's when I got onto hypertension medication. And so I continued to see my physician and my psychiatrist, so because I want to monitor that I, you know, that things are getting better. And of course, the interesting thing is, whilst I was on Kili, we were hiking with the doctor. So every morning and evening, he was checking blood pressure and oxygen levels. So that if your blood pressure is crazy, you've got to go back. Yeah. And if your oxygen levels are too low, you can't. And for me, first of all, I didn't have altitude sickness. My blood pressure was going down daily. And my oxygen levels were going up daily. Like, I was getting better by the day. I was like, this is exactly. This is my year of healing, and I needed this. I did, like, this doctor who I was checking us was surprised, because I told him, you have to tell the doctor, you know, give me the letter that says your medical condition and so on, which my travel doctor said perfect, but I have to tell him the chronic medication that I'm on. So it was good that I was so, but I just want to monitor at least until the end of the year that I'm fine. You know, I'm turning 57 this year, so I'm not young. So I've got to take care of myself and check that I'm okay before I just stop everything, like seeing my But I it's not like I'm not stressed anymore. I'm like fine. Like, I'm happy, and you know, it's cool.
The Crossover on UCT Radio.
Download our app, available on the iTunes and Google Play App Store.
So we thought we'd play a little game with you, because although you say you're old, I don't think you're that old.
I'm a senior citizen. I'm retired.
I've seen the shoes she pulled up into the studio with.
That was the first thing we were looking for.
Okay. The drip is not saying old at all.
Exactly.
Okay, so because it's a road trip,
yes,
we had to play a little game.
Yes.
And, you know, you can't have a road trip without some good music groups, right? So we've made you a playlist.
Exactly. And so I'm going to ask you to press on the maps on the screen so the song doesn't play.
Oh, wow. Do you think I won't know the names of the...
You don't even know the names, Prof. But because we're in a student car, the audio is a bit funny with our playlist, right?
Okay.
So we're going to need you to help us out.
Yeah,
we're
to sing.
We're going to sing a song, and you have to finish the lyric.
Okay, that I can try. Let's see. I don't know. If I know the song, I'm sure I can do it.
Okay. So let's start with this one. It's a good one. Okay.
You got it, Prof. Let's go.
No, I can't. Okay, I can dance to that one, but I can't finish. I can't finish the lyric. No.
We'll just vibe out to that one.
No. Actually, I can't. I can't finish lyrics. No. There's too many of these songs. No. I can dance to them. Go again.
This one might be a bit easier. Leave. I didn't want to lie. Started to cry, but then remembered I.
Is this South African music? I don't know.
The first one was, this one is an international artist. Leaving, I didn't want to lie. Started
to cry, but then remembered I don't know. No.
Prof,
I don't know.
You in the song. Wow.
Now it's familiar. Tell me, who's this?
This is Miley Cyrus.
But me and Miley, come on.
No, prof, you're here.
Not Miley, come on.
Then who is? Can you tell us who your go-to is? Listening to, who's on your playlist?
It depends what playlist, you know.
Okay.
I mean, I'm old, guys, so you know, CC Winans is my girl. Sometimes you know, I'm a Navy, of course, but Rihanna has retired that stuff. And she counts once in a while.
Oh, she counts. She's putting the bank account for real.
Of course. No. She made the right choice. She made the money choice. She made the money choice.
Oh, but I'm glad you love Riri.
Oh, I love Riri. I love Riri and her choices and just how she claps back.
She claps back.
Riri doesn't play.
See why you love her, bro.
You and her.
Love that.
Oh, no. Riri's my girl. Riri, you say I love Beyonce, but Beyonce is like, you know, it's too collected for me.
Well, too collected. If you like Beyonce.
No. Not in the way I love Riri.
Okay.
But she's okay.
Well, this is a Beyonce song, so let's see if you know this one.
I get that way.
No. I'm failing this test. No.
It's the first test you failed.
Where?
You are TikTok famous at this point.
No, but it's my piano. It's on my piano.
Okay.
It's none of the, and of course I've got iTunes Music, right? Mm-hmm. But you'll be surprised at what iTunes Music has done to me. Like, suddenly I like people that I don't even know where they come from, because their songs, their lyrics resonate. I'm like, oh, Bereles, oh wow, it sounds so nice. But it's weird. Like, young people are like, what? No, but like, I play it over and over again. But Whitney is my all-time favorite. Oh, I have
Whitney,
to say,
of course.
Whitney is my. And I like the fact that I can play a Whitney song. Uh-huh. Thibaut Taj had me in the studio.
And
then they said, what song? And I made them listen to a Whitney song. And they were like, we don't know that.
Which Whitney song was it?
Yo. I don't think you know it.
I wouldn't. Yeah.
It was a soundtrack. You see,
to a movie.
That's how much I love Whitney.
Whitney.
I love my Whitney. I mean, yeah. So Whitney, and at home, I don't listen to everything, right? So I can listen to one song for the whole bloody week.
Yeah.
and everybody is putting fingers in their ears. Yeah, everybody has got their headphones and whatever, because I am, you know.
So would you say you're more of a lyrics person?
Look now what's been playing. That's Whitney. You see, I've been listening to Whitney.
Right now.
I've been listening to Whitney's playlist. Exactly. That's how it is, right? So, and it's not like, I mean, I can go online and just listen to it. I'll tell you the song that, actually, I even put it on my Twitter page when I left, because I was like, oh, UCT students, there, don't cry for me. You don't know it, right?
I don't know.
Don't cry for, no, don't cry for me. Don't shed a tear. Na 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 na. Will always be something like that. Nobody knows that because it's a soundtrack. It's a soundtrack. You know?
Wow.
Yeah. So, but that's how I love Whitney. Yeah. I'm just forever exploring Whitney. But yeah.
Since we're doing a road trip with you and you're our icon, well,
yeah.
I'm having
you guys are dramatic. Icon. Icon, where do you live? Are we in the same planet?
You're an icon. it's actually such an honor sitting in the car with you right now.
Yeah.
I just want to know if you would, if you could choose one person, like one role model, dead or alive, to sit in the car with and have a road trip with and have an interesting conversation with a great playlist.
Wow, I would choose Winnie. Ah, without a doubt.
Winnie Mandela?
Oh, absolutely. 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 I'll choose Winnie.
And what would you ask her? Is this, is like a burning question you have?
Yeah, I mean, Whitney was brave at a time when being that brave as a woman was not fashionable. Yeah. And it's just in terms of how bold she was to say the things that she said. So I would probably talk to her about that. I'll talk to her about when she was under house arrest. You know, I mean, she's a rebel of note, you know. I keep thinking, I'm a disruptive presence, and from the day I was born. But I think Winnie was a disruptive presence. I think she was ahead of her time. You know, and I think people were scared of Winnie because even the fact that some of the things that we were told about her, about Stompie and whatever, and the people who said them came out after she died and they said, no, actually it wasn't true, this is what happened, blah blah blah. I'm like, wow, this woman was really something. People can be so scared of you to make sure that you don't get listened to, or they limit the power of your voice, because it's just, they're just worried what it'll do.
I mean
even after Mandela was released, Winnie was still quite adamant that this is not it. She was like, this is not it. You can imagine if Winnie was alive today. But I would want to talk to Winnie.
And someone in studio before we came to do this interview with me asked, they've always wanted to ask you, does Prof have any regrets? Do you live with regrets in your life?
You know, I don't. I live with lessons, lots of lessons. Lots of lessons. And that's just how life is. You know, that's how just how life is.
Because I guess you can't do anything in retrospect.
No. And I think actually, you know, Tom, I look back at my life and I think I was a model child. I was a model teenager and a model young person. I actually think I did too many... a lot of things,
you
right?
Didn't break rules.
I broke rules. I broke rules in a different way, not in the way that your girls did. So I don't drink. I've never drank before in my life. I never jumped windows, whatever. I think I keep thinking, gosh, I must have given the young people in my township a hard time, because I'm sure their parents always said, you must be like Kheti. You must be like Kheti. Look at what Kheti is doing. Seriously. And meantime, I was rebellious in other ways. You know, I was naughty at school, but I always wanted to make sure that the teacher will want to protect me. And it was just by being excellent. Like, if I always thought, if you do your work, you do your, the teacher will always wanna, like, you'll always be wanted in class, like you will be that one, you know, the favorite child. Even though you're naughty, I was small, I was underaged and small in size, body size, but so I look back and I'm like, I actually haven't, I mean, I'm a disruptive presence even today in a different way, but not in the mainstream way. You know, and so I keep thinking, it's probably the kind of disruption you want.
It's not that we need to break
boundaries. It's not the kind of disruption that's destructive. And I think that's also, I think I was quite a hard take for my detractors at UCT, because I mean, they could never catch me on anything. Ang jolo, ang puzi ma, ang puzi, ang chonchi maali. You know, like, I'm just...
There's no smart...
I'm sure they are the people who reported me to SARS. SARS did an investigation on me the whole of last year. They found nothing. Actually, SARS owes me. SARS... Yes! My text person is like, SARS owes you. SARS wrote to me and said, we are doing an investigation on you. Well, I was like, I donate so much of my money. I have foundation, I don't raise funds, I use my money. I was like, surely they had meetings and they were like, yo, this woman, it's tough. What next?
What can we find?
Yeah, I had weird, weird.
It's
nice.
Can I just plug
it?
It's
not.
It's
a bit further on. Okay. Yeah, and it's not here. I got weird things that I thought, this is too sophisticated. I'm sure it comes from my detractors, my very powerful detractors. Yeah. But yeah, there were a few things, and I just think that made it harder for people to get me. Yeah. Just generally 100%. That yeah.
So we're pulling up to Nourish now. We're going to get a smoothie with Prof. But before we leave, yeah. Do you think your time, and it's obviously difficult now, you can't predict what the future looks like.
Yeah.
But do you think your time in formal academia as a VC, as someone who's in leadership within a university is over? Or do you think?
Yo, wena. Even just on Friday.
Yes.
Someone called me from overseas. They want me to apply for a job.
Yeah.
A VC job. And I'm like, and you know, the company that I'm working with in Joburg, they're like, no, please don't. This is not even academia. Like, yes. No. And sometimes, by the way, I mean, in some country on this continent, a president sent his people to talk to me about a job in their country to higher education. I was like, wait, let me think. Let's talk again. Like, and I was like, this is too small for me. They're going to limit me, these people. Yes. They're going to limit me. Just imagine. No. I mean, just look at how some people at UCT were they just could not deal with the fact that I came to UCT with a name. Mm. I came to UCT being a brand. UCT did not make me. Yeah. And some people found it difficult. I mean, I would be sitting in a meeting and someone says, nobody's bigger than the institute. And I would be thinking, what are they talking about? And I'm like, oh, they're bothered by me. I'm the one. But I don't think I'm bigger than the institution. I think the institution is bigger. But hey, I'm not here to be making myself small. No. The institution should use what I am and who I am. I'm using that to take for the good of the institution, and everyone should see it that way. I don't want to go to anywhere where I will come in and suddenly people think I'm dominating the institution. I've got too much to offer in this world. So hey man, I'm sought after. I just don't want to talk about jobs in higher education now. Especially VC jobs. I'm doing other things out there. I'm doing other things with universities here and there. Some, you know, but otherwise, I'm working in corporate. I'm doing food security. I'm attending conferences. I attended my first conference on poultry and eggs. You know,
Poultry and eggs.
I'm looking. I mean, if you've been following me, you'll know that. Farming things that like I'm in there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm visiting farms, I'm touring farms, I'm being sent like, here's a farm for this much. I go to poultry. Okay, I can look at a chicken today and tell you whether it's healthy or there's something wrong with it.
More skills.
I can tell you about eggs. I mean, I can. Yeah, wow. I'm just getting into other things, learning other things. And
taking time to explore some other interests.
Other interests. I'm getting into risk and governance and whatever. Just the background of it. And so will I get into higher education again? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. This is a long life. You can never say never. You can never say never. You know, whatever I'm going to be doing, Tom, is going to be interesting. It what I'm doing is interesting. The reason I said to one colleague from UCT who was asking, like, you seem to be having fun. Please tell me the detail. I was like, nah, I'm not telling you. You people at the investment, you are so evil. You will be calling the people to say, get rid of it. No, I'm not telling, not yet. And I said to the people, like, should we announce? I'm like, no, calm down. We are working.
I love, a lot of people say that when you're trying to do something big, they should just move and
start. Yeah.
And then let them watch.
Yeah, no, no, no. I said, no, we are not announcing. We are not announcing anything. We'll announce when the time is right. At the moment, let's just do the things. Let's make money. Let's serve the people. Let's. Yeah. Definitely not politics.
Okay. Yeah.
No, no, definitely not politics.
Really?
No.
So politics is something that, that...
No, 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 no. I'm not a politician. They'll fire me very quickly. I don't know. I don't know how to lie. I don't know how to steal. I mean, you've been with me here, Tom. I don't know how to lie. Like, to do it.
But I would think that you'd want to come into a place like and that and try and see what you can...
No, and be a minority... Again,
you don't want to be my team done fight.
No, 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 no. I want, I can be an advisor. Mm-hmm. Yes, I can be an advisor to some politician who's will, who's willing to listen. And if they don't, because if they don't listen, I can leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see, I don't want to be the person in front
proving themselves
and lying or just telling people things. Because I know that's what they want to hear.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I know that I'm not going to be able to do them, or they can never happen. I don't know. I don't know. I and I doubt that in my lifetime, in my country, there'll be... I don't know whether there'll be a space for politicians like those, like me, who are willing to just say, hey, this didn't work, you know? We tried this housing policy. Guys, it didn't work. So we are dumping it today.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we are dumping it. We want to start afresh. Forgive us, and we don't wait for 20 years. We just
before something happens.
No,
yeah.
No, 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 no. Or we go to people who are like, we don't have money, guys. We can't do this or that. So we're gonna do this. It's cheap. It's whatever. It's makeshift. But please forgive us. We're gonna keep you in this until we are. I don't think that's how politicians wrong.
Think. They should be thinking that way.
Yeah, but I don't think, and for me, I would want to be able to do that if I were a politician.
You
and
also
I don't
want
think
to see the gifts of what you want.
Yes, 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 yeah.
Prof,
yeah.
Now that we're like onto the politics chat, you've worked with students. You have plenty of experience with students and young people.
Yes.
National elections are coming up next
year.
And we've seen the stats. Young people are not registering to vote.
Yeah.
In your experience, like interacting with the youth, what do you think it is that is making young people apprehensive about?
I mean, I think they think they'll never make a difference. They think their vote won't make a difference. And I think that's a big mistake because they're handing over their power to someone else. And I think voting, they should vote. If you can, if you've been disappointed by your party, then vote for a voice that you want in parliament, even if it's not going to win the elections. Vote for a voice so that they get a seat. It might be a small party. You know, there's going to be independent candidates for members of parliament.
Yeah.
So I've always taken that approach that if my party is disappointing me, I vote for a voice.
Okay.
I know they will never win elections, but I want this voice to be in. Do you know what I mean?
Like balance out.
Yeah, to at least to to balance out the room. You want a voice. So do that, you know?
And I guess it also starts at home. Like it starts with our SRC vote.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Exactly. And even with the SRC voting, I would go on Instagram, say to students, I would go live and say, go vote.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, it's not like if you don't vote, you're not going to have an SRC or you're not going to have a government. We are going to have, it won't be the voice you want.
Yeah.
At least put your vote for the voice you want.
Yeah.
Even if it's not going to be the president. Mm. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Just put it for the voice you want. You want a lively government. You want a government that where there's robust discussion and so on. Yeah. So don't just throw the towel. It's important.
We're with Prof, and we're going to be back. We're going to go get a smoothie, and then we're going to take you back. But this has been the most amazing conversation,
thank
and I'm
you.
Glad we still have a couple of minutes with you.
Yep.
The latest hits, the greatest music, and your favorite personalities on UCT Radio.
So we're in Nourish now, and you were just telling us about, like, this is, you know, you've hosted your birthday here and so forth. I mean, most people are going to, you know, go to like a fancy restaurant.
Exactly.
And this is just your space. Like, you're not looking to be fancy.
No, what? I'm fancy. You're personally
fancy by myself. Yeah. I don't need all the frills, you know. I love it. I love it here. And the interesting thing is that nobody ever expected me to be here. Mm. But I could so I had some of my meetings here. I would say to people, oh, let's meet, and I was like, nourished. Lunch is nourished.
So tucked away in this little corner and
observatory. Yes. But and I didn't come here to hide. I came here to enjoy the food, what they said. And sometimes I would sit outside and people would be passing.
Watching. Did they like stop in the window?
But outside, because there's those chairs outside. And sometimes people stop. One day, there was a group of white old ladies. I don't know where they came from. And one of them recognized me. It's actually not long ago, last year. She was like, we love what you're doing. We love what you're doing. The other ones looked at me, they didn't know who I was, and they kept going, kept doing it. And she recognizes me.
Yeah. That is so
sweet. But it's a nice spot. I love it.
I guess it's moments like that where you're seeing people who appreciate what you're doing that makes those hardships so worth it.
True that. And I don't know whether I spotted. She's got children or whatever. But she's like, she kept repeating. So it's moments like those are special. Because she didn't have to say it.
Yeah,
you know? Exactly. There was nothing in it for her. Mm. You know?
And then, obviously, I mean, when I was, you know, I know that the Prof Peking scholarship is still going on at UCT, which is so important. Do you see that something like, if you had control of it, I mean, obviously you say there's obviously a lot of things out of your control, but do you think that will something that will stay?
I don't know if they have advertised it without me, because it shouldn't be out of my control. The Oppenheimer scholarship is not out of the Oppenheimer Trust control. It is my money that came from my salary. I've just been too busy. I know that when I left, there was like R1 million in it. And I worked for all of it. Mm-hmm. Either when I gave talks or some of it was the 10% from my salary. And yeah, so I would like that to continue. I would like for it to keep going every year. And we can give. I just said sort of 2023, we're not going to give anybody. But 2024 will start, because there's too much drama this year. We'll do it again in 2024.
Amazing. And I guess, you know, you've always said, and I find it interesting when you say there was a pushback against calling the scholarship for your name.
It's crazy.
But then you say you look at like the Oppenheimer scholarship, that's in their name. So what's the difference when it comes to you?
Exactly. You have the Oppenheimer scholarship, you've got the Oprah Winfrey School, you've got the...
Yeah.
Why is it a problem that you have Mamakgethi Peking scholarship? Where I don't even raise money from anybody. And to be honest with you, there's also the Max Price and his wife's scholarship. It's just when I was there, it was there. He set it up when he left. They haven't given anybody, but it's there, it's called by their name. Why can't we? Again, it was that guy.
Yeah.
Just that guy. And it's weird. It's because people think, I don't know, people think you are here to grow your power or to become powerful or whatever. Yeah. They don't see the value of doing that. Even just, you know, when we talk about transformation, I used to talk about transformation not just as employment equity. It's also in terms of transforming who gives. Mm. You know, I talk to black people about giving, that you don't have to be a millionaire, you go to give, these are our universities and so on. But in the same way, we can actually transform the scholarship. But the only way to do that is to get the other people with other names to give, and then we get different Oppenheimers.
Yeah.
And then they give scholarships, you know? So, but if you stop me from doing that, how will young people who are now students at UCT know that actually they can invest their money in the university and support the university and do a building that can be named after them, or a chair or scholarship or whatever? I mean... Yeah. You know,
100%.
Yeah,
and I've been interested. Is Cape Town still home?
It's
still home.
It is. Yes, it is. I mean, the Gautengers are not impressed.
We're not. Yeah. Tom and I are both from Joburg originally, and we're like, when is she? Is she gonna come back?
No, but like, you know, I spend more time in Joburg than
you. Yeah, I would think so
now,
as well.
Now,
with your kind of work now.
And I wrote on my Twitter last week as I was coming back, Joburg is so busy. I mean, I am busy in Joburg. Like, I am busy. I was like, I want to go to Cape Town. I want, you know. And people wrote, are you still going back there? Those people don't like you. It's not their place. It's our place. I mean, you know, whoever it is who doesn't like me. But Cape Town is beautiful.
And if you are choosing,
it's different.
And it does have a remarkably different feeling to Joburg.
So they do different things for me, you know. So I'll always have a home in Joburg, but I'll always have a home here too.
Okay.
You know.
And do you think primary home would normally stay as Cape Town?
I don't know about primary.
Okay.
Because family, more family in Joburg, in Gauteng, you know. So, I don't know.
Amazing.
But it's good to have a base here.
Yes.
Yeah, it's good to have a base, a proper, comfortable base in Cape Town.
And I've always found it interesting when students say, you know, they do a degree to get a job. They walk out of university and they expect a job. But your thing is, you say, you know, your degree is your base, right? It's what you do above and beyond your degree that makes someone, you know, more hireable and entering the workplace. For people who are, say, in first year now, you know, they've just joined their degree, but they want to do exactly that. They want to start building on that. Where do you start?
You know, different societies, whatever, is also a good place to start. But also just having a mindset of learning, understanding that learning doesn't just take place in the classroom. It takes place everywhere. If you're at UCT, you are actually, even if you dodge classes, you will learn a lot from, just because it's like people from over 100 different countries, different cultures, different environments. Then, but like you can talk to people every day and learn and grow and, you know, and you can do a lot of things. Of course, you learn in class from the staff, from whatever, you know. So I think it's people, this idea of having university as a path to a job is not good for individuals, but it's not good for the country, because it sort of curtails people's creativity.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you are just going to be that, whereas you could be something else. You know, simply because you worked at UCT Radio whilst doing your degree, you know, you might end up being something else. And I think that's why one of the things I did when I was VC was entrepreneurship. I championed entrepreneurship because I think every student, it's a good education if every graduate gets out with an entrepreneurial mindset.
Yes.
I mean, and a good example is that, you know, Mandela went to Wits, spent 6 years at Wits. In 1943, he started at Wits. But you know, he never graduated.
I'm surprised to hear that I didn't know he was at Wits.
He was at Wits. The only degree that Mandela has from Wits is an honorary degree. But you should see how he writes about Wits in the book, in Long Walk to Freedom. He talks about how Wits changed his perspective in life. He talks about the fact that he met young people who had the same political consensus he has, even though they're from a different race. First of all, he wasn't even a member of the ANC when he went to Wits.
Yeah.
He heard about the ANC there and he joined it there, you know. So it just shows, and not only did he write about Wits that way in his book, in his will, he gave Wits money.
Wow.
It's incredible. It's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
And that's, it's just a good, that's why I talk about the difference between your qualification and education. And I say, Mandela didn't get, he didn't get a qualification from Wits.
Yeah.
But he got an education. And that's what we must all get from it. So he didn't, if you get a qualification, a certificate, you think it's going to give you a job.
Yeah.
But it's the education. When they were in court with the Rivonia trial, the people who represented him and them were the people they were on campus with.
Yeah.
You know? It's like he found himself, he's connected, he's like, fine. He didn't graduate six bloody years at university doing a law degree.
Yeah.
But he got a lot.
Yeah.
He got a lot more than people who went there and just came out with a certificate.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
And I remember I was speaking to my gran and she said to me, Thomas, do you ever want to, you know, start a company or do something of your own? And I said, yes. But I said, time is ticking because the best time to do it now is while I'm in this place where I've got the smartest minds around me in the world.
Okay.
Yeah, free consult. Free.
And free Wi-Fi unkept. So, once you get out, they start charging you.
Yeah.
Your professors will start charging you.
Yeah.
Now you can go chat to them.
Yeah. So that you would say that's a place to start. Speak to your people.
That's what I said to students all the time when I was VC.
Yeah.
This is the best place to start because you've got the smartest people. Those smart people are students. Some of them are staff. Some of them are whatever. You've got free Wi-Fi. Nobody says to you, you should sleep or work. You know, you know, it's like you've got control. You don't have to wash the dishes or wash your sneakers. So it's like the best time to start. And also, if you start now, you fail. You make sure you fail fast.
Yeah.
Because entrepreneurship is not easy. Let's face it, it's not easy. So you can start, you can make the mistakes that you make, and your eyes get opened.
Yeah.
You make connections with people. Some of the people you make connections with will be students on semester study abroad.
Yeah.
You might end up having a business partner from Brazil.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Here, from Jamaica, from the US, who you wouldn't otherwise have met.
Yeah.
Met, but because you're on campus, a campus like ours, it's easy to do that. So I think it's the best. It's the best place.
100%. Well, we're going to just quickly have a sip of our smoothie and then we're going to head back to drop Prof off. But this has been amazing.
Thank you so much for coming through. It's been such a wonderful time chatting with you. And we hope to keep this relationship going and checking in on you and
seeing
what you're doing. I mean, I think what we've had to learn is that we just have to keep our eyes peeled. We have to watch the space.
Like, we never know. Like, nothing is going to stop you, Prof. We're really, really excited.
No. Keep going.
Keep going.
Keep going. Shoulder squared, back straight, head up.
Head up high. Mm-hmm. Okay, Prof, one last thing. Is there any, what is your best advice to anyone who is in uni now, anyone who is also in your time of healing? You spoke a lot about being in your time of healing, picking yourself up from like a hard time. What do you recommend to anyone who's gone, like feeling the similar feelings that you've been feeling in the past year or so?
I mean, I think surround yourself with positivity.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's good to do that. But as I said, going to Kili was part of my healing, and because it's for me.
Yes.
And but also it's good to remind yourself. I mean, on my podcast, I always end with the thing about being you. You know, people think they've got to be something else to. You know,
do well, like follow a blueprint.
Yes. Just be you. You are enough. Remind yourself that you are okay. You know, if I hadn't done that, after leaving UCT, I would have disappeared from the public face. And, you know, and I think that's what some people expected, you know. Mm. But I thought, I've done extremely well. I've done extremely well, you know, even just to be here. And to do what I've done, I reminded myself of the things, you know, moments of power.
Yes.
The things that I did at UCT that could never have happened if I didn't do it.
Yeah.
The boldness in some of the things that I did, especially at the beginning where it was really, really tough, you know. So remind yourself of those things. You are capable. There's a good reason you are here. You know, if there was no need for you, you wouldn't be here. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you, Prof. This has been gorgeous, and we wish you all the best.
Thank
you. You're going back to Joburg soon with your with
tomorrow. Tomorrow early morning. I'm out.
And we'll be back right after this.